Yeah, fuck it. I hit record. And I just let me see here.
Okay.
I'm loud.
Fava beans.
Yeah. I think you're a little louder than me. But that's probably for the best. Fuck it. And what's he then that says I play the villain? When this advice is free, I give and honest. How am I then a villain to counsel Joey to this parallel course directly to his good? So will I turn her virtue into pitch and out of her own goodness make the net that shall enmesh them all? Don't ask me. I'm not Shakespeare. I didn't write that. I should have gotten more if I was going to do some sort of like Clody villain thing. Why, bastard, wherefore base? When my dimensions are as well compact. Etc., etc., etc. We all know Shakespeare. We've all read Othello. Or, King Lear, sorry.
Ah, King Lear, yes, of course. Yeah.
Well, the first part was Othello and then King Lear, so anyway.
Well, welcome to the villainous episode of Just Becousins. My name is Joe Neal. This is my brother from another mother, but the same grandmother, Jason Mark.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we got a topic.
We got a topic.
I got coffee. I got cigarettes.
Yeah. I've got an evilness about me. I do want to start off with a non sequitur, as usual. Something I've been meaning to bring up for a few episodes, but I keep forgetting. So I'd like to bring it up now. Okay? That's all right.
Hit it.
Yeah, okay. So you know that song, I Want a New Drug by Huey, Louie, and the Newie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Old Huey Lewis there. He says that he wants a new drug. One doesn't make me sick. One doesn't make my eyes red. One doesn't make me break out. All that stuff, right?
Yeah.
You're familiar with the song. And then the chorus or the main hit or whatever you want to call it, I don't know, is one that makes me feel like I feel when I'm with you, right?
Yeah. When I'm alone with you, yeah.
Exactly. Well done. Here's the thing I noticed about that song. He doesn't want his eyes to be red. He doesn't want to break out. He doesn't want to get sick. He wants to feel the way he feels when he's with her. But what if he feels those things when he's with her? Now, I get it. He doesn't want those side effects from a drug. Who does? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, who's going to say, hey, I want a new drug, one that makes me feel sick, one that makes my eyes red, makes me break out? Nobody's going to say that. I'm just saying he's with this woman. They're, you know, he's in love. They're, I don't know, they're watching Hulu or something. And his eyes start to get red, and maybe his face breaks out. Is he going to leave? Sounds like he is. Sounds like he would take not feeling those things over being with her. I mean, if someone said, here's a drug, it's going to make you feel like you're in love with a hottie, and like she loves you, you're going to break out a little bit, your eyes are going to get red, you're going to get sick. I'm like, yeah, give it to me. I don't care. Fuck that. All I care about is feeling like I'm, but not Huey. Huey don't play like that, I guess.
Yeah, Huey, Louie, and the Newie. Let me tell you.
A little bit screwy.
I think that song is basically just a list of deal breakers.
Like yeah.
He's destined to be alone.
Yeah.
Because he has this huge list of deal breakers, because if you make him feel that way, then
he's out.
He wants a new drug.
He wants a new drug, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I get it, right? When he wrote the song, what was it, the 80s or something? I get it. He's, you know, trying to say, hey, I want a new drug. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, drug. He's like, oh, the drug is feeling in love. It's not getting high or, you know, whatever. But I get it. But they should have checked with, like, somebody. Maybe me. They should have checked with me before they put these shitty lyrics out there, because someone's going to catch him, like I did. And
well, yeah. Huey, Lewis, and the News. I like calling them Huey, Louie, and the Newie.
Yeah. Huey, Louie, and the Newie.
That's just his attempt, and he does it often, to be kind of like romantic. And yeah, all of his romanticism is super cheesy.
Yeah.
And a big picture of a big titty naked woman just appeared on my screen.
Nice.
I didn't do that.
Well,
that's beautiful. Hey, but check this out. Watch this.
Okay.
Huey, Lewis, and the News. How can I rope that into the villain episode?
Yeah.
How can I make that on topic? I bet you can guess. What's the association?
I'm guessing you're going to say that because Huey Lewis did not let, what's his name? Fox. His name's Fox. Something Fox. The Fox guy. with the thing and the
Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox. Huey Lewis did not let Michael J. Fox's band play at prom or homecoming or whatever, and so he is a villain to Michael J. Fox in the movie Back to the Future. Yeah,
that's a pretty good one.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a stretch. It's a deep cut.
It would really earn you a lot of points at the international yoga competition if you could do that stretch. Yes.
This is a stretch. It was a deep cut. Speaking of deep cuts, how about the deep cut that Christian Bale puts in a motherfucker's head while he's listening to Huey Lewis in the News American Psycho?
You nailed it. Yeah, absolutely. Here's the thing. Never seen the movie. Oh. I've never seen it. I've read the book twice. Both times I really regretted it.
Go ahead. You're pretty quick on the YouTube. If you look up Christian Bale murders somebody to Huey Lewis in the News or something of the like, we can listen to the scene right now.
All right. I have to get close to the microphone when I'm typing. Christian Bale Huey Lewis.
And I would venture to say that any of our listener knows this scene. It's kind of a rare thing that you haven't seen that movie.
Yeah.
And there's, you know what? Maybe he talks about Huey Lewis in the News in the book because he gives a big speech about it.
Yeah.
I wonder if that speech is in there, but only if you hear Huey Lewis in your head all the time, then, and you're reading the book,
yeah,
then you get a similar experience.
Okay. Well, I found a clip. I haven't heard it yet, but I'll just click play and we'll see what happens. Okay. Here we go.
Fun.
They're early work.
Ah, shoot.
This is it.
Commercially and artistically.
Okay. Is that Jared Leto? No, that's too...
The whole album has a clear, crisp sound and a new sheen of consummate professionalism that really gives the songs a big boost.
He's walking around behind this guy who's about to be killed. Yeah. The guy doesn't see him, and he's like preparing, like wrapping shit in plastic, I think, as he gets ready to kill him.
He's been compared to Elvis Costello.
He just moonwalked in.
But I think Huey has a far more bitter, cynical sense of humor.
Shiny axe. Hey, we're going to do a play-by-play.
Yes, Alan?
Why are there copies of the style section all over the place? Do you have a dog? A little chow or something?
No, chow. Helen.
Is that
Helen?
Raincoat? Yes, it is.
Did he call him Helen?
In 87, Huey released this for their most accomplished album. I think their undisputed masterpiece is Hip to Be Square. A song so catchy, most people probably don't listen to the lyrics. But they should, because it's not just about the pleasures of conformity and the importance of trends. It's also a personal statement about the band itself. Hey, Paul!
Ah! Whoa. Okay, killed him.
With an axe.
With an
axe,
yeah. Let me just real quick, this also came up when I clicked on, when I typed in that stuff. So here's another take on that very same scene. There's Weird Al, okay.
Oh my God.
Do you
it's
like
Al.
American Psycho?
It's okay.
Although originally polarizing to audiences and critics alike.
Oh my God.
Developed a much deserved cult following when released on digital video disc.
Do you recognize that voice?
Meta.
Do you recognize that voice? I'll keep playing.
Or DVD.
Let me hear.
There it found a second life and really came into its own commercially and artistically.
Damn.
The movie works both as a grim examination of male vanity while also maintaining real genre thrills, justifying these tonal shifts by placing the audience inside the head of the duplicitous lead character. Christian Bale's dynamite performance gives it a big boost.
Oh, wow. This is so on topic. This is so fucking on topic, Joe. We're geniuses.
But nobody could have brought that certain athos and charisma to it quite like Bale. A role he later recalled a shade of in Christopher Nolan's Batman pictures.
Yeah. Hey. More on topic.
Yes. Who is that out. Fucking dude?
Newspapers all over the place. Is that like a Huey Lewis on the News joke or something?
Weird Al, right?
That's Weird Al, yeah.
No, Al.
Is that a raincoat?
Yes, it is. In 2005, Lionsgate released this, The Uncut. I think it's an undisputed masterpiece. A movie so entertaining, most people probably don't listen to the message.
Most people probably don't listen to the lyrics.
But they should, because it's not just a great character study, but a sardonic metaphor for 1980s greed. And
this is Weird Al's most meta thing ever that he's ever
done. Oh my God. Okay, so that person, that actor who was pretending to be, well, who was, you know, doing the parody version of Christian Bale.
About Christian Bale, who was talking about Huey Louie and the Newie. Yeah,
that was Huey Lewis.
No shit.
No shit. And you know the scene.
Good job, Al.
Huh? Yeah. Oh, no. It gets better. You know the scene in that scene we just watched, the psychopath scene, American Psycho, where he reaches down to take a drink, and right next to the drink is a pill bottle with his name on it?
Yes.
Yeah? You remember that? Well, in this version, which is on Funny or Die, when Huey Lewis reaches down to get a drink, and there's the pill ball, it says on there Huey Lewis, and underneath it says new drug.
Hold on a second. Show's over. Have a good night, Jason.
Yeah, people are going to say that we planned this all out, that I said, hey, I'm going to start with non sequitur, Huey Lewis, and then boom, 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 but no, we didn't. It just, that's how, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, Huey Lewis.
And that's wonderful, but now I have no fucking where to go.
Well, we can get into the nitty-gritty here. Let me change the settings here so I can play the background music. The background? That's got to be a pun somewhere. The background music. Let's talk about villains. We're going to talk about villains in general because they're fascinating. Do you have a – let's start off. Do you have a favorite villain, or can you list off some villains that you find intriguing?
Like yes, and maybe we can get into what kind of as we go through these villains, like what are their motivations?
Yeah,
or you know other aspects of what makes them terrible or frightening or whatever. But I think a lot of times it's their motivation. And I would like to say one of the best villains ever. I can't remember her character name, but oh shit, now I can't remember the actress either. But the movie is Misery.
Yeah, Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates, and she plays, do you know the character's name?
Can't remember, if I can look it up.
That character is a truly frightening character for
me. Yes.
I think she's a great villain. Now, is she truly, like, malicious, or is she just completely hobbled by her own mental illness?
Was that a pun?
Sure.
Well, because she hobbles him.
I know. Okay. God damn it, you had to point it out?
Well, I did because I didn't know if you knew what I was saying because you said, sure, like I'm being stupid. And I usually am, which is why I fell for it, yeah.
No, that's funny. It's like, Joe just made a joke and he didn't realize it. I have to say something.
Okay, fair enough. I'm an asshole. I'm the villain today. Annie Wilkes.
No, that was funny. I'm glad you said something. Yes, but was she hobbled as she hobbled? What the fuck's his name? James Caan. Was she hobbled by mental illness, or was she truly evil? Like, was she a psychopath? I don't know.
Okay,
I feel like she was just disconnected from reality, delusional.
Okay, so...
So that's a different kind of villain. I wouldn't call her evil, but I'd call her truly frightening.
Yeah, she was very frightening. I think she... I don't know what she qualifies as, but yeah, she was very frightening. Was she evil? Yeah, you make a good point. Was she motivated by the desire or will to do bad things? I mean, she did bad things, and she, I think, knew that they were bad. But did she want to do bad things, or were they a means to an end?
I would argue that she didn't think anything she did was bad. She, from her perspective, everything was – she was almost saddened by some of the things she had to do.
Okay.
For, you know, in order to – in her world, it was all – she was like protecting this beautiful piece of artwork,
right?
Which is why she had to fuck him up with a, you know, sledgehammer.
Yeah,
I guess in the book it was an axe, and she chopped his foot off. I never read the book.
Yeah, yeah, I only read the book. I don't think I've seen the movie. I can't remember. I can tell you that in the book, talking about like whether she's a psychopath, there's a scene where she says to him, "Hey, I'm about to go into one of my dark periods, where I do some pretty fucked up shit. So I'm going to go lock myself in the basement, and you're kind of on your own until I come out of it. See ya." So she's aware.
That's like some lingering insight into her mental illness, and she's trying to protect him from it.
Yeah.
But then when she's fully delusional, she's, you know.
Fully delusional.
Come on, I think this is schizophrenia or you know, delusional disorder, perhaps.
I would give it simply narcissism with a healthy dose of bipolar disorder.
Well,
I'm not a psychologist.
We're not qualified to diagnose, but I think we can safely say The character had mental illness. That was absolutely Stephen King's intention.
Yeah, Stephen King is a horror writer, and therefore he should be something of an expert on creating villains, right? And I think that, and this goes to maybe saying that Annie Wilkes is a villain, I think that a villain needs to be more than just a bad guy, right? The villain needs to have some kind of relationship with the hero or main character. It can't just be that, like, the bad guy did something bad. Like somebody murdered somebody, and now the cops are going to go get him. And if the whole movie is about how the cops do it, he's not a villain. It's just a bad guy. Whereas, like, I might as well bring this up now because it's going to probably dominate the rest of the podcast. But like the Joker and Batman, they have a relationship. They don't exist without each other, right? Joker is the iconic villain in my estimation. What do you think?
I agree, and but I'd never thought of that. Maybe it's his relationship with Batman that makes him even that much more compelling.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that if you were to look at any other, like the test for is this bad guy a villain is, well, does that person have some kind of relationship? They may have to know each other, but there has to be something. Their motivation is in some way connected to the existence of the hero or main character or the protagonist, if you will, right? Like a guy goes and kills the serial killer's out there killing people, and like the cops are gonna go get him, but the serial killer doesn't care about the cops or that one main character, right? And the movie, we've seen people get killed all the time. The movie is probably going to be about the character development of the cop. You know, he goes into a dark place to find the evil. I wouldn't call that bad guy a villain. I just say he's a bad guy. Whereas, say,
I like that distinction, by the way.
Well, I've been thinking about it.
There's bad guys and then there's villains.
Yeah.
And they become a villain because of their relationship to the protagonist.
And it gets complicated too, right? Because in some movies or some texts, which covers movies, books, etc., the villain might even be not a bad guy. Or obviously, okay, I'm thinking specifically Hannibal Lecter, right? In the first...
He helps the protagonist.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not the main villain, but he's a main character.
Well, that's just it.
He's villainous.
He's villainous, but the bad guy in that movie, James Gunn, I think is his name, he is not a villain because he doesn't have a relationship with Clarice. But Hannibal does, right? Hannibal uses her and uses James Gunn to manipulate events so that he can escape, right? That's his game. That's his end game. Or that's his game plan the whole way through, obviously. So in that respect, he uses her, and therefore he is a villain. He is a bad, you know.
I think in a way, just following your logic here, this is an interesting thought. Thank you for this.
Sure.
Buffalo Bill is the main villain, but he's almost an extension of Hannibal Lecter, given that it's all of this is tied to the psyche of Clarice Starling.
Well, if you were going to say that Hannibal created Buffalo Bill in some way as a future means of manipulating the FBI, I would say that's possible, and therefore the extension thing works. But
the whole thing about Clarice Starling and you know her past and her trauma and everything, it all links up with her pursuit of Buffalo Bill and the entire exchange and the manipulation on Hannibal Lecter's part, like.
Right. Yeah.
I've always liked Silence of the Lambs, and I've read a few of the books. Like Hannibal's one of my favorite books.
Yeah. Okay.
Now you've got me thinking of, you know, Hannibal is the villain in that book
In Hannibal, yeah, because he's out of jail and eating people's brains and stuff. I probably should have at the top of this episode said, "Hey, everybody, spoilers galore!" Because I don't give a fuck if you don't want to.
Shit.
Yeah, but I was going to say something. It's almost as if Hannibal's evil plan in the Silence of the Lambs was to create a serial killer or create a psychopath in James Gunn such that only a very, very, very smart FBI agent would be able to even get anywhere close. And what Hannibal needs is somebody that smart to manipulate, because if it's some dumb FBI jerk-off who comes in, Hannibal can't gently, you know, nudge them in the right direction so that he can get things like...
He wanted, like, an opponent, but he also wanted someone vulnerable enough. It's almost like he was setting up a game
Absolutely, yeah.
To play, and he needed the right players. Clarice Starling ended up being the perfect
individual. Yeah, yeah. And of course, it's all fiction, and Thomas Harris, I think, is the guy who wrote it. He can, you know, do things however he want. I'm trying to think
of another. And I just want to say, here's another huge spoiler, but one of the things that I love the best about Hannibal, the book, that's way different than the movie. Uh-huh. I don't know if you know what I'm about to say.
I don't.
But the end of the book... Did you ever read the book?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, if you remember, at the end of the book, it's either Hannibal draws out this inner demon from Clarice Starling and she becomes a serial killer with him at the end, or he has completely brainwashed her into becoming a serial killer.
Yeah.
Either way, at the end, she travels the world with him to kill people.
That's right.
Hollywood could not abide that.
No.
And I've read the book a few times, and I could never come to the conclusion if he always knew that was something lurking inside of her that he could draw out.
Right.
Or if he just, throughout his entire relationship with her, was playing toward this end to mold.
Yeah, I gotta say, I do remember what you're talking about.
Person out of her, you know what I mean?
I do, and you know, not reading too much into it, I would suggest that the reason to do that in the book was to show that Hannibal Lecter was this unstoppable force, that he wasn't a human being, that his character is not one. We're not supposed to examine his development because he's so powerful in his evil that he can talk to anybody in such a way as to manipulate them to do whatever he wants to. Did you ever watch the new Sherlock Holmes TV series, the one BBC and all that?
Yeah, quite a few, and I really liked their Moriarty.
Yeah, did you watch all of them? Did you see where Moriarty came from and Sherlock Holmes, how he's connected? Did you see all of them? Because I don't want to give it away to
you. No, in fact, I stopped before the last season.
Okay.
And I keep wanting to push play, and I guess that's what happens on the last season, right?
The
most recent season.
Yeah, I won't give it away to you, but I'll say something such that the listener who may have seen it will see how I'm relating it to what we're talking about here with Hannibal Lecter, in as much as it's put to the audience that there are people who are so smart and so evil that they can talk to people long enough and make them do whatever they want. And that happens in the Sherlock, and that's all I'll say. And I think that in the book, that's, like I said, it's supposed to show that Hannibal Lecter is this force of nature. Whereas I like the movie ending a hell of a lot better, personally.
For Hannibal?
Yeah. No, not Hannibal. For Silence of the Lambs. Are you talking about Hannibal where she goes with him?
I was talking about Hannibal the movie is a completely different ending than Hannibal the book. I didn't mean to confuse that.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about Silence of the Lambs. Okay.
No, at the end of Hannibal the movie, I think he gets away, which is like, oh, okay, haha. You know, Hannibal kind of wins. But Clarice Starling remains a good person.
Right.
And redeemed in some way at the end, whereas that's not the case at the end of the book.
Right. Right.
And you're right. In both, you get the message, which I think needed to be, you know, they needed to stick with the idea that Hannibal Lecter is unstoppable.
Like, right.
You can't get him.
So,
but in the book, it's more than that. Where he more than wins. The heroine disappears, and that's it. He has overtaken her completely.
If we go back to the Joker ethos, right? Batman's number one rule for himself is don't kill, right? He does not murder. He doesn't kill anybody. And the Joker's number one motivation is trying to get Batman to kill somebody accidentally or otherwise, or even kill the Joker himself, right? And if he does that, then Batman will have been transformed into his own antithesis and the Joker will have won. And so I guess if you want to say that that's what happened to Clarice at the end of the book Hannibal, that Hannibal finally turned her into her antithesis, which is him, their relationship has reached its end point, right? It's no longer going to be interesting to the audience.
That is like an ultimate victory for a villain. And like have you ever read, speaking of Batman and the Joker, this what is it, Return of the Dark Knight? They made a cartoon out of it, but there was a really great graphic novel, and the Joker dies in it, There really are a lot of spoilers.
That's okay.
Tonight. The Joker dies in it, but he wins because Batman kills him.
Yeah.
And I think the last thing he says is like, I win. And then he fucking dies.
Right.
It's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not, I didn't make that up. I mean, the reason why we're talking about villains is because we were trying to figure out a topic. And at that time, I was reading about the Joker because the new Joker movie's coming out with Joaquin Phoenix. And I find that sort of thing fascinating. And I think out of all the villains, the Joker is my favorite. He's the most intriguing to me. So, yeah, I read a lot about how the Joker and Batman have a relationship. And it's, you know, they kind of
need
each other.
Well, and I think even the more the underlying motivation of the Joker, and I think a lot of people are on board with this, and sometimes it's very obviously presented, but it's he even says it in The Dark Knight, like he's an agent of chaos.
Yeah. That
what he would like is for all conventions to be broken and for there to be complete anarchy, not only in society, but in people's souls. And to break Batman of his one rule is the ultimate victory in that war
and
against order and morality.
Right. And as comic book characters, they are antithetical to one another in theme, like the Dark Knight, or Batman, I should say, even in his original conception, was moody and dark and very truthful and logical, I think is important, because he was used to being a true detective.
In some ways, unstable. And that's like the overlap there. That's the connection, and that's where the Joker looks at Batman and is like, "Well, you're actually like me. Like you're joking yourself."
Right.
And well, I'm going to prove that to you. And that's his love affair, is that he can prove that Batman is actually capable of being unhinged and turning into exactly what the Joker is, an agent of chaos.
Yeah, I think that's another interesting topic to go on, and maybe we could bring in some other villains to talk about this. But I've always thought about, like, you know, we're talking about Hannibal Lecter. Like, here's this guy who is very, very intelligent. He's a psychiatrist. He has to know that what he's doing, you know, killing and eating people, he knows it's morally wrong. And he's read all the books. I bet you he would even say he knows that it's utterly depraved. Now, he's definitely arrogant and thinks he's above all that. That's the definition of a sociopath or psychopath or what have you. But there's got to be a part of him. This is the way I've always sort of rationalized it, is there's a part of Hannibal that thinks everything in that we use to measure morality, everything that we use to measure decency, is a construct. It's created, and it could have been anything else. We may have, as a society, created a construct where not punching each other in the dick is considered villainous. You have to punch people in the dick, otherwise you're a villain. And he knows it's all constructed, and therefore, since he is so smart and has figured this out, it doesn't matter what he does. So he has sublimated any kind of urge he has to this exploration of, let's say I eat a person. I ate them and I don't feel bad. And I'm not I haven't lost any control, right? I'm just fine. I killed the census taker and ate his liver. No biggie. I fed it to some.
Yeah. Hannibal's always in control.
Right.
This is always a calculated exploration of his own kind of desires. And,
right.
And he even has appreciation for aesthetics and stuff
absolutely.
Like that.
So then the Joker, just so I can lecture you some more, here we are at the 30-minute mark already. So the Joker then also sees these fake constructs. Uh-oh, my son woke up. We may have to pause and see if he goes back.
That's okay.
I'm going to be the villain here. Poor guy. The Joker also sees the constructs that have come about, the civilization and the structures, and he's like, why is it more morally correct than anything I might come up with? If I destroy it, who's to say that that's quote-unquote wrong? There's no right or wrong, right?
I like that. He thinks everything is a construct, and who would construct things better than him? So everything that comes to him clearly is superior. And,
right.
And so that's it. He sees everything through his lens. And, again, that's That's a narcissism thing. It's
absolutely
sociopathy where he's like, no, my standards are the only ones that hold.
Well, that's just it. I'm gonna take it even a step further. That it's not so much that he says my standards are the only ones that hold. He's saying that there are no standards. Here, watch this. The end result is the same, right? I think the Joker has said in some comic somewhere, you know, everybody's gonna die anyway. So, and that's a very existential point of view, right? Actually, it's not just existential, it's absurdist in as much as the Joker or Hannibal Lecter would say to you, it's absolutely absurd to suggest there's meaning in any of this. Whether you eat people or save them from burning buildings, it's the same thing. So
I would say this, that the Joker is a true nihilist, and
fair enough,
his only belief may be the belief in believing in nothing. Mm-hmm. That is a motivation. Like he wants to see it spread. Like he wants nothingness to take over. Sure. But then Hannibal, I actually think that he has standards. Like he has standards of like politeness. Depending on the time and place, you know, he can mm-hmm. let those go and eat your face.
Right.
You know. But there's a code there, and there's an understanding of time and place and what's appropriate and what's inappropriate, and standards of cuisine and standards of art and all this stuff. So I don't think he's not a pure nihilist, but I just think that his appreciation of things is very like myopic and disturbing.
Sure. Can we? We're really flying through this episode, and we have other things to do. But before we do, we've been talking mostly about the Joker and Hannibal. We touched on Annie Wilkes from Misery a little bit. Are there other iconic villains that we can bring into this to see if that they fit our theories? I mean, the first one that comes to my mind that you will probably bring up is Darth Vader, right?
Vader's
definitely a villain. However, his relationship with the hero is literally a genetic relationship, right? And he ends up being a good guy at the very, very end, right? Instead of turning Luke to the dark side, he kills the Emperor.
I think what's different about Darth Vader is that the whole point is that he has good. There's good within him,
right?
And you can't say that about Hannibal or the Joker.
Right.
So and some would say that, you know, the most interesting villains are ones where there's a conflict
within them. I think you can say that about Hannibal and the Joker. And as much as you pointed out, Hannibal has that sense of propriety. It's that little nugget that keeps him from going out and just slaughtering people constantly until he's mowed down, right? He appreciates art. He knows that a civil conversation will achieve more than just, you know, barking at somebody, I can smell your cunt, you know, that kind of thing.
And, yeah, but I don't see any conflict there. He simply thinks that if you're a fucking heathen that can't appreciate things, then you deserve to be insulted and eaten, and that's just fine. And that's his reaction, and he finds it completely appropriate.
Right.
Like, I don't think there's any conflict there.
I think the conflict is that, at least from the standpoint of how he's created as a fictional character, and I don't want to say that I know what the author's thinking, but I think the conflict is that we're supposed to juxtapose this propriety with this savagery, right? The conflict is, here's a man who appreciates fine art and chopping off somebody's face, right?
Yeah, I see that. But that's not a conflict within him. That's a conflict that the character it's the conflict is within us. It's one of the things that disgusts us and fascinates us about Hannibal Lecter.
Right.
He's totally feeling fine about it.
Yeah. And then the Joker's inner little nugget is he could kill Batman. He could get a sniper rifle or a bomb or whatever, but he can't. But he won't because he wants Batman to kill somebody. He can't kill Batman, or the Joker won't be the Joker anymore. That's his little thing. So even though he is this master of chaos and wants to destroy and cause destruction, the thing that holds him back at all times is this one deal that he cannot go through with. And then, you know, we're going to move on to Darth Vader. Yeah, he has that little tiny bit of good in him that Luke brings out at the very end.
He's truly conflicted.
Yeah. I don't know that he's conflicted. I think at the end he's conflicted. What I'm saying is throughout those first three movies, or the fourth, fifth, and sixth one, we see Luke is the one struggling with his inner evil, right? A little tiny bit of evil in
him. Yeah, because his anger.
His anger, right? And that's what Darth Vader and the
Emperor... Strike me down with it.
Yeah, exactly. That's that little thing. But, oh, flip-flop, it turns out there's a little bit of good inside Vader, and all it took was the Emperor frying Luke with his hand bolts, and Vader's like, no, fuck that, I'm pitching you over the wall here. So... I do like this idea.
I gotta say, this is a problem, and it's one of many problems with the prequels. The thing is, if you want me to be conflicted about Darth Vader and like root for the goodness dormant within him, don't have him kill a room full of children.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm like, well, he's a child murderer, and then he's completely unforgivable. I don't want him to be redeemed.
Yeah, but why
you know
did
I mean?
Why
it ruins
did he,
the whole end where it's like, oh, his goodness has now, you know, overshadowed his hatred.
Why
at
did,
the end, I'm like, well, fuck you. You killed a bunch of kids. I don't care if you feel better now.
Right, right. And let's go back to at the beginning when you said, you know, why did they do the things they do? Because I can't remember from the movie. I only saw it once. Why did he kill the kids? What was his thinking? Why did he have to kill them?
I think they presented a reason. I don't think it was even good enough for me to remember or get on board with, which is another problem with the
our
movie.
Listener can write in and tell us. If I recall, I think it had something to do with what's her name? Padme, the gal he was in love with.
Yeah.
Something with protecting her or protecting her baby or something. So I think the little tiny thing that's inside Anakin, the grown-up evil Anakin, is that he's motivated by his totally
by fucked, love.
Yeah, his totally fucked up.
But he was also like, we should rule the galaxy together. It wasn't just love for
Padme. Yeah,
terrible, megalomaniacal shit.
Absolutely. Well, that's because no, you're fine. It's because George Lucas, in my opinion, I know I'm going to make a lot of people mad, not the best writer that ever lived, but good enough to write space westerns. He tried to go too deep. He had this guy born of he gave him a virgin birth because he's like, you know, I'm going to take the whole Jesus thing and completely turn it on its head. So it's virgin birth with no father, and this lack of a father is his lack of ability to understand a moral compass, which, if you ask me, makes George Lucas one of the most disgustingly sexist people on the planet, and therefore a villain in some ways. But Joe,
many people would say that George Lucas is a villain.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's a whole documentary about it.
Oh, there is. Okay, we're probably going to have
people versus George Lucas. Anyway, are we at?
Sorry, we're approaching minute 40. We have things that we've got in the can, or not in the can, but in the virtual can, and if we may have to either do this topic again or just do a part two, because all we've talked about so far is Hannibal, Annie, Joker, Vader.
We were talking offline and you were like, well, we might just end up talking about the Joker, so I'm kind of pleased that we've talked basically primarily about the Joker and Hannibal and nobody else. That's fine with me.
Okay, cool. Good.
Let's dive into this. Shall we pay for our sins?
Yeah.
Where would you like to begin?
What do you want to do first?
Let's do a word from our sponsor first.
Okay. A word from your sponsor? Our sponsor?
A word from my sponsor.
This one?
Yep.
Do you want to introduce it or should I just push it?
Hit it.
Okay, I don't remember where I put it. I may have to play that intro again. Where did it go?
That's okay. I think it's funny when you do that. Play the intro again after you figure your shit out.
Oh, you know what? Remember how I told you that I had this Jingle Palette set up with the wrong settings? When I reset it, it deleted all of my little clips. So I tell you what. Why don't you talk for 2 minutes about villains? Let's pick a villain and you can do a monologue while I pretend to listen.
Okay, let me see. What is a good villain? All I got is Joker and Hannibal. That's sad. Here's a villain.
Okay.
I don't know what his name is, but we've talked shit about oh my god, who's poor man Stephen King?
Clive Cussler? No. Dean Koontz.
Dean Koontz, right. Yeah. You know, apparently he's really formulaic, and but a lot of people are suckers for that, including my dad and to a certain extent myself.
Okay.
I read this book from Dean Koontz that I thought the villain was fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
And I think the book was called False Memory or something like that. And the whole thing is, much like Hannibal Lecter, the villain was a psychiatrist or maybe just a psychologist.
Sure.
But his whole thing was he would kind of put people in a hypnotic state and place false memories in their brains. So it became this huge game of, you know, as a reader, I thought it was it was tricky and kind of enigmatic because you don't know what really happened and what didn't, given, you know, the accounts from the different characters, because this villain was fucking with everybody's head. And so I thought that was well done.
I thought
it was good.
I might have gotten a lot
of that wrong. I haven't read the book since I think I read the book when I was like 22, which is a couple of decades ago.
That was a while ago. God damn. Okay, I got things fixed, I think. So let's try this again.
This spring, you can watch TV, or you can watch HBO. Or, if you want to watch something on your phone while you sit in the waiting room at the dentist's office, you can watch the newest HBO Comedy Hour, featuring legendary humorist and Batman's archenemy, the Joker. The clown prince of crime is back with his lighthearted brand of relatable levity.
So I was killing this guy the other day, and he was like, "No, no, please, and I want my mommy." So I killed him some more, and he screamed and cried until I killed him to death.
This time, the Joker has the audience rolling in the aisles in their own blood as he dishes out new classics and old gems like...
What did the priest say to the rabbi? He didn't say anything because I killed him in the face with a machine gun.
Laugh until you die as everyone's favorite malignant psychopath releases poisonous gas into the crowd and spins unforgettable tales from his childhood.
Most serial killers like myself start fires and abuse animals throughout their childhood. When I was a kid, I thought I'd killed two birds with one stone. And after the birds were dead, I killed two puppies with one blowtorch.
In this latest special, the Joker branches out and ventures into new comedy territory.
What do you call two superhero porn stars doing a Shizer film? Shatman and Throbbin.
HBO Comedy Hour. The Joker. Premiering this Sunday after Game of Boners.
What was that? I sound like fucking Scooby-Doo.
Oh, that was good. That was real good. It was really, really good.
You know, HBO is a great sponsor.
We're so blessed. Okay, so we could either do. I know we haven't had one in 7 episodes, but Larko sent me an ad. Hooray! Or we have a special feature. Which do you want to do first?
I want to hear Larko, and then we can
do the feature.
We can do our special feature.
Okay.
Present our presentation.
Okay. So I need to set up a few things. Real quick.
Okay.
I'm going to need about 10 seconds. I'm going to put myself on mute while I get this set up. And then, Joe, I want you to go through the nursery rhymes and name the villains. And I want you to say who would play them in the movie. Like, who's going to play the... Yeah, okay, so go.
Okay. There was the old woman that lived in the shoe. I think she was the only character, except for all of her kids.
Yeah, okay, never mind. I'm ready. Are you ready? Okay.
Yeah, go. Let's go.
Oh, I don't have the Larco logo up. Shit. You're going to redo that anyway, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's okay. Yeah, okay. I'm excited for a Larco. Let's do this.
Okay, here we go. Can you hear me okay? Okay, here we go. Ready to up your game? Larco is proud to present the Hannibal Lectures. This 15-DVD set features 45 of Dr. Hannibal Lecter's most dazzling speeches, monologues, presentations, and TED Talks. This much ballyhooed and critically acclaimed collection will guide you as you develop physically, emotionally, mentally, and gastroenterologically into the brilliant sociopath you've always wanted to be. Unless you're going to eat your victim while he is still alive, which I highly recommend, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. The next step, of course, is to kill him. But Dr. Lecter, sir, you may ask, do I simply slaughter him, or should I torture and terrify him first? Well, if you have to ask such questions, I don't think you'll have the stomach for this. These lectures feature Dr. Lecter speaking on such important topics as how psychiatrists choose a victim from their client base, developing a sense of smell so that people will be both impressed and creeped the fuck out, how to grow your own fava beans, which Chiantis pair best with each of the major organs, how to sharpen a scalpel for peeling someone's face off to use as a mask, and so much more. They will call you evil because you will use your power to terrify and cause immense pain. But you are no mere psychopath. You do not create terror and dismember people merely for its own sake, no. You will terrify and torture because fear and pain are the only ways to season the meat. Ketchup will not do. Whether you're a well-established serial killer or just a little cannibal curious, the Hannibal Lectures has something for everyone. This 15-DVD set comes in a beautiful lacquered box, lined with human skin, and bearing a certificate of authenticity from the Franklin Mint. Order your copy of the Hannibal Lectures today. I'd like to close tonight with a little poem I wrote for a parole board that was adjudicating my release. Look at the person to your left. Now, look to the right. Of the three of you, one I'll be having for dinner tonight. I'm Dr. Hannibal Lecter. Thank you. All right. That went better than I thought it was.
All right. Going to be. Okay. Hell of a Larco.
Yeah. Longer than I thought it was going to be, too, but anyway, what are you going to do? All right. Should we do the feature? We've got 13 minutes left, or do you want to save it till the very, very end?
Let's do it. I'm really excited to hear this.
Okay, yeah. So we need to set it up, though.
Sure.
Well, it's Otis and Lavondo. Lavondo and Otis. The two gentlemen that we used a chrono crystal to move through time from the 16th to 15th century to the Super Bowl, and it turns out we sent them to the wrong Super Bowl, and they gave us the wrong Super Bowl prediction, which is fine.
Yeah, it's a different timeline. Yeah. Time travel is complicated.
Yeah, and apparently it's really weird because we figured out, okay, there's this multiple reality thing, right? We figured that out somehow. And apparently these multiple...
Well, you did.
Yeah. Well, you helped. Don't
fair enough.
Don't be your own villain, Joe. Don't edit yourself. So
okay.
We found out that, you know, there's multiple realities and they split up constantly, and in this episode we talked about the joke. We said Lavondo and Otis go to the reality created by us talking about villains and tell us what you see. And apparently because we talked about the Joker so much in this episode, which we didn't know we were going to do until Lavondo and Otis got back and told us we did, they witnessed a fight between two people, a hero and a villain. And that's what we're going to hear them talk about.
And so they do like a play-by-play as they normally do?
Yeah, because that's what they do. That's how they converse. They can't not – I mean, even if they were having like – if they were like eating eggs at a diner, you know – Otis would say, these eggs doth taste delicious. And Lavondo would say, but lo, the salt, it is in excess. Or whatever, I don't know. Not in excess, the band, but in excess. Anyway.
You do a really good Otis and Lavondo impersonation. Good
you
job.
Know what? I've been listening to this clip we're about to listen to so many times that I feel like I've almost got it perfect, you know. So anyway. Yeah, so here we go.
This is a play-by-play of a battle between Batman and the Joker?
That's right. Okay.
All right.
Here we go.
And in this bell tower, mine dear Otis, were you to ride the dragon here?
Quiet thy malodorous tongue, Lavando, you rascal.
What is thine fuck with the Irish accent today?
See ye not there, lurking in the shadows, awaiting his prey, the very madman himself?
Regard, 'tis the Joker. Oh, what a terrible and most evil rictus doth bestride his pale visage. It doth escoriate mine soul.
Nay, we lie like knaves, for he lurketh not, nor waiteth for prey. He danceth?
Egad, verily he doth. And with the fair maiden Vicky Vale. She seemeth...
How seemeth she, dauntless Lavando? She be dressed in white gossamer, her hair like spun gold.
But she be limpeth in his arms. See how yon Joker doth give her pitch and sway, like a Raggedy Annie mannequin, as those possessed by mere childrens.
Ah, but sharpen thy steely vision. There, in those same shadows we thought hideth the psychotic Joker. 'Tis none other than the Man of Bats.
Forsooth! He who sulketh in the darkness, striking foul terror in the hearts of rapscallion and villainy.
The plot thickeneth. See how the fair Vicky Vale hath espied the Man of Bats, and pretendeth to not hath.
Lo, she doth place small kisses on the purple-clad clown prince.
He be fooled.
Yea, and verily, villainy doth always be felled by damned hubris.
The Man of Bats appeareth. S'blood, he be a most mighty and puissant figure.
Ah, but what saith he?
Quoth the Man of Bats, have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?
He puncheth the Joker. The terrible villain bounceth off a largest church bell.
Now the Man of Bats puncheth again, and now he throweth him through yon crumbly wall.
And again, these walls taketh a pounding, almost more so than the Joker himselfeth.
And yet the Joker doth laugh, nonetheless, as he faketh injury, but spitteth out false teeth.
See how they chatter, if.
But lo, now the Man of Bats and the Joker do converseth. The Man of Bats explaineth that the Joker did slay his parents.
Which foul deed did inspire the young Bruce, Bruce son of Thomas in the House of Wayne, to don the mask.
The Joker backeth away towards yon ledge. He attempts this one last ruse.
He donneth spectacles and queries the Man of Bats.
You wouldn't hit a guy with glasses, would you?
Yea, the Man of Bats wouldeth. The Man of Bats doth not be gentle-like with those who must squint when perusing periodicals and other such the similar. He striketh the Joker squarely into his eldritch and most wicked kisser.
Like Liam Neeson, the bat fellow doth punch thine fucking face. Over the edge goeth the Joker.
The Man of Bats and, yea, Vicky Vale doth peer over the ledge to view the Joker's surely besplattered corpse.
Nay, the Joker grabbeth at them and pulleth.
They tumbleth over.
They dangleth.
And the Joker doth cackle with evil mirth. He turneth to a gargoyle of stone and shouteth, what you laughing at?
He reaches down now. Hath he found in his heart no place for the foul demise of the fair Vicky? He offereth unto her his hand.
'Tis a false hand!
What foul and demented trickery! The Man of Bats only barely saveth her from the fell drop.
A whirlybird approacheth. 'Tis henchman, coming to render aid unto the Joker.
Said Joker doth dance on the ledge, becausing it to crumbleth.
He grabbeth the rope ladder, droppeth from the whirlybird.
But there, the Man of Bats doth unsheath from his belt of utilities the grappling bat rope.
He doth tie young Joker to the forementioned gargoyle.
What a very Timothy Burton-esque rendering of Chekhov's gun trope.
Verily, and now the whirlybird attempteth to pull away. It draggeth the Joker off the ledge.
The rope unto which the villain be tied doth break the gargoyle.
The Joker be overburdened, methinketh.
You fucking thinkin'? The tension buildeth. Tis a most anxious and terrible moment, fraught with uncertainty.
Ah, there plummeteth at last the Joker.
The foul villain be dead.
At leasteth for the nexteth 19th years.
The Man of Bats and the fair Vicky Vale doth pull themselves back Blacketh to safety.
All well is once again, mine dear Lavando.
Indeed, mine dear Otis, indeed. Let us now commit ourselves to conversations not unlike those held by corpulent beings who dwell in the subterranean areas neath the domiciles of their parentage.
Do you mean on the subject of whether the Man of Bats hath violated his own rule of never truly slaying his enemies?
Indeed, Otis. Whilst consuming the green elixir, the dew of the mountains.
Off with us then, Lavando.
Off with us.
Wow. That was heavy.
It was. Play by play.
Play by play. Yeah.
Commentary.
Commentary play by, of the Joker and the Batman fighting each other.
It's cool how we could hear... it almost sounded like Danny Elfman music in the background.
Almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knew? Well, I mean, Otis and Lavando, they do it right. I mean, they don't just show up and start blabbering. They put on the whole production. They are play-by-play guys.
So, and you know what's cool about it is Batman and the Joker were so into kicking each other's asses that they didn't even realize there were two idiots, like, yapping on the fucking side of the ledge.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that scene seemed very familiar to me, and if I recall, the two idiots pummeling each other didn't seem to notice Vicky just standing there. And she's, like, following them around, too, like, I want to be part of this conversation. These two bozos are like, no, we're talking about how we created each other, and it's just, anyway... So we're going to do a Heroes episode. We did a villain episode. We're going to do a Heroes one.
Yeah.
And, Liam Neeson should play Batman. Except he can't because he played, what's his name, Ross on Ghoul or Lasagna on Fool, whatever his name was, in one of them Batman movies. Didn't he?
Yeah.
He taught Batman how to punch people in the face, I guess. And he turned out to be evil or a villain. I don't know. Let's save this bullshit for the bullshit episode. We have 30 seconds to mention some last few villains. Darth Maul from... Star Wars movies, he's pretty cool.
Yeah, he kind of looks cool.
Yeah, the chicken. And,
he's very acrobatic with his crazy laser sword.
Yeah. The chicken from Family Guy?
Well, I'm going to say Darth Maul is... There's no relationship, really, that he has with anybody. I think he's just a fucking bad guy.
Good point.
And that's why he got, like, 10 minutes of screen time, and then they chopped his motherfucking ass in half.
Yeah. I agree with you. All right, good show, Joe. The good shows, I don't know if the listener likes it or not, but, you know, screw it, listener, I am your villain. Good shows to me are the ones where the time just zips by.
Yeah, it's fun to talk about the Joker and Hannibal and the smattering of other villains, too, but
yeah,
fun conversations go very quickly.
We'll have another villain episode, and we'll limit ourselves to not talking about the Joker or Hannibal.
Here's something, because we're going to do a horror episode here in a while. I don't know when's the next Friday the 13th? That's when we should do it.
Friday the 13th next. Oops.
Let me guess, it's next month.
It probably.
Anyway, we're going to do one soon. I almost brought up... Because, you know, this is exciting for me.
Mm-hmm.
The new Pet Sematary came out.
Oh,
and you know how I feel about Pet Sematary, the book and the movie, the first movie that they made.
That's the
second movie. I'm not going to say anything about that until the next horror episode. But, boy, it would have fit in this episode because the villain, I think, is fascinating.
Well, I tell you what, Joe. The next Friday the 13th, according to this website I'm on, is in September of this year. And there will be a Friday the 13th in October in 2023. And I think we'll still be podcasting then. Might not be this show, but some show. So
we can't go that long. I'm not waiting until September to do another horror episode. Okay. So
we should do one for, like, 4th of July. Oh, hey, everyone who's listening to this, thank you so much for listening. I have no idea when I posted this, so I appreciate your patience. Because there's some stuff we're going to do in post, which we usually don't do, but I'm telling you about it because, you know.
It's a black motherfucker.
But we're not going to be doing an episode next week. I am going to Mexico, and Joe is going to Las Vegas.
Yeah. I'm going to a Taco Bell manager convention.
Yep. and I'm going to get drunk. That's where I'm going. To get very drunk a lot. And I'll talk about that on the show. Let's do that. We'll dedicate the next show that we do. I said do. The next show that we do will be about what we did when we didn't do the show.
Yeah. We'll give each other the news.
Yeah, that's what we'll do. We'll say. And then on my third tequila, sombrero, or something. And you'll say the same thing because Vegas and Mexico are more or less the same. Right. Yeah. Las Vegas, that's
like Spanish. Joe, and Joe, what's new? What's Huey Lewis in the new?
What's Huey Louie in the newie? And you'll say, I found that new drug. Yeah, and we've come
and don't make me sick.
Don't make me sick. Yeah. Today,
so I guess we're taking a break.
Yeah.
It's kind
of
sad.
Speaking of villains, my son loves the soundtrack to the movie Moana. He's never seen the movie, but he likes the soundtrack. And a somewhat villainous personage in the movie, which I've also never seen, is a gigantic shiny crab, and he is sung by the guy from the bird, the two guys, they're from New Zealand, and they're Flight of the Conchords. Jane something, what's his name? Anyway, he sings this crab, and my son doesn't like the song very much, so whenever I want to tease my son, I sing that song, but I change all the words to be applicable to his situation. Like the opening goes, I was a drab little crab once. And like I'll say to my son, I was a happy little dad once, but you made me sad or whatever, you know, and he hates that. So I'm my son's villain. I don't know why I brought that up, by the way.
That's cute. I've always thought that crabs were villainous.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm saying.
I do. I do now. Yeah.
I have a bone to pick with you.
Jermaine Clement, that's the guy who does the voice, and he sings the crab.
I thought it was Jermaine.
No R. It's New Zealand spelling, Jermaine.
I just thought they pronounced it Jermaine because you know how you say Jermaine in a New Zealand accent.
Jermaine. Well, that's probably why they dropped the R. His mom was like, "Okay, I can't do it."
Who fucking needs that R?
No, anyway. They're like, "What do you want? What do you want to call your baby?" His name's Jermaine. Is that Jermaine or is it Jermaine? I said Jermaine. Is it Jermaine or is it Jermaine? Or something like that. I don't know. Scream something. I'm hitting stop.
Jermaine!